The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines, where you can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome to another one of our Urbanite Radio stories. We are joined for this by Gregory Paul. Gregory Paul is a very interesting human being and character. I've met him before. Michael Amph wrote the article. The article is called The God That Fails. And Gregory Paul has some interesting ideas that he has researched about what makes for religiosity and why certain societies are and are not, and what progress has to do with religiosity or not. He also is one of the nation's leading experts on dinosaurs and more, and we'll cover all that a little bit more in our conversation. And Gregory Paul, good to see you once again. Welcome to the studios.
Oh, thank you very much for having me here.
It's always good to see you. But let's go from where you are these days. I mean, this is to introduce our listeners to you. I mean, you've become a very serious researcher in sociology.
Yes.
You've become a leading expert in the world of paleontology.
Started out doing that.
Mm-hmm. And branching off into new ventures all the time, intellectually.
Yes.
An artist, a writer, discovers things about dinosaurs other people didn't agree with but been proven correct.
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Create this metric system that we'll talk about a bit about your to make your point about religions in society.
Yes.
And you only have an AA degree and go off on your own to do what you want.
I have no degree.
You never even got the AA degree?
I never even went for one. That's a mistake.
Oh, I thought they said in the article you went for the AA degree. Montgomery, no.
Didn't you? I have never gone for a degree.
Not even an AA degree?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Tell us, I mean, so how does one end up as a serious leading intellectual figure who's done some very serious work, respected by PhDs and scholars all over the place?
Well, what I did do is I did study informally under Robert Bakker when he was here at Hopkins.
At Hopkins, right. Yeah. I remember Robert Bakker. Yeah.
And I was thinking of going for a degree at that time.
He was a paleontologist, a dinosaur.
Yeah, he still is.
Right.
He's out west now.
Right.
And for various reasons, I decided not to, partly because all of his students really hated him by the time they left. I mean, he's an interesting guy, but there's – I just decided it wasn't that best an idea. And I don't want to have an academic position and don't want to be in a museum. I don't want to deal with the paperwork and so on. So I decided to do it on my own.
Excuse me. Let's talk a bit about what has gotten you all your good and bad press at the moment, which is your notion from the research you have. I think you published it in the Journal of Religion and Society 5 years ago. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that was the first paper I did.
First paper. Mm-hmm. That said that you cannot – basically what you're saying is you cannot have an advanced society that is deeply religious. Is that what you're basically saying?
That's what I more said that in the paper I more recently published last year in Evolutionary Psychology, which is online. You can go to it and read it quite easily. Yes. And to back up, the mm-hmm. reason I got into this – was because creationists have long been arguing. Creationists have two arguments for why America needs to get back to God and don't believe in Darwin's evolution and all that. And one is they have this sort of a pseudoscientific argument. They're saying it's false. But their other argument, and the one that's probably more important for the reasons that Americans reject evolution, is they're saying if you don't have a godly society where everybody believes in God and a moral, purposeful God, that society is going to go to hell in a handcart. And that because believing in evolution causes people to lose religiosity, that you can't believe in that either. And they actually have a point there about people believing in evolution probably degrades religiosity. But what really irritated me was this argument that societies that are not religious are doomed to societal failure. And the problem with that is, as we well know, that in Europe, Canada, rates of acceptance of evolution are much higher than the United States. And they are much less religious there too. And obviously the French aren't having that many problems, or the Swedes. There was a big problem with this argument. And the other thing that was very interesting is there are all these right-wing think tanks out there. And if they could get the data to show that societies were really worse off, they'd be publishing it. So I got suspicious about this. So what I did – this is about 10 years ago – I started just tabulating some stuff, looking up some data, doing some correlations like homicide rates and juvenile mortality, teen pregnancy rates. The level of religiosity in these first world countries, and what I've generally done is looked at the top dozen and a half, the most prosperous. And the results were so startling when I started doing them, because generally it shows the more religious nations are, the less well off they are. I said to myself, somebody's already got to have done this. So I started looking into the literature, called up some sociologists. Nobody had. One sociologist even said that they wish they had thought of this. So,
not the first time you've heard things like that.
So I started accumulating the data, and I eventually got it together and published it.
So let's talk about this, the system you developed to do this, or that you developed or used it, about how to judge states.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Oh, the Successful Society Scale.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and I base that name partly on there's another scale that's been done called the Happy Planet Index.
Yes, right.
But that only had three factors in it.
And which were?
One was use of resources, how efficient countries are in using resources. It may have been per capita income or something like that. And I can't quite remember what the other one was off the top of my head.
But you developed this Successful Society Scale. This was.
Yeah, and I have about two dozen factors in it, which is the most comprehensive yet done by far. And again, I don't understand why this hasn't been done before. I mean, this is one reason I'm doing this, is because sociologists haven't done it. So I did all these factors: homicide, incarceration rates, juvenile adult mortality, teen pregnancy, abortion rates, STD infection rates, per capita income, income disparity, poverty, divorce rates, a whole bunch of things.
Incarceration rates in there, incarceration rates in there as well?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I correlate this with levels of religiosity, which are measured by absolute belief in God, rates of prayer and church attendance and so on, atheism, belief in Darwinian science and so on. So did the correlations between them, and the results do show that in general, the more religious societies are in the first world, the less well off they are. And what I did was I did a 0 to 10 scale. Did some mathematics. Zero is the worst off among the developed nations, and 10 is the best. And when you total up the United States, which is the most Christian religious country in the West, it came out around a score of three, while the Scandinavian countries came out at around 8, doing much better. And there's a nice correlation between them. You can plot it up, do regressions on it, and all that. So this is a real trend.
What is the trend? I mean, it's because because Scandinavian, Nordic nations, and many Western European and Northern European nations are...
As well as Japan, Australia, Canada. They're in there too.
Okay.
New Zealand.
And New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Are not as religious. So how does that... So do you have to make the argument about why
there
that's...
There's a whole bunch of things this tells us. Right off the bat, the idea that societies – there's a hypothesis I call the moral creator socioeconomic hypothesis, which is what basically religious people are saying when if societies aren't godly, they're going to be in a lot of trouble. That's just plain wrong. I mean that's refuted. Obviously, nations that are much less religious than the United States – and by the way, the United States isn't truly that religious in certain ways. I mean, it's more religious than any other first world nation, but it's much less religious than a lot of other nations. But still, within the first world, we're the most religious, we're the worst off. The less religious nations are doing the best. So that just – when somebody says that you have to be a godly nation, you know, in France, for example, two-thirds of the population doesn't believe in God. Either
two-thirds of the population in France.
Yeah, there's a Harris poll that found that two-thirds of the French are atheists and agnostics compared to 20% of the United States.
Agnostic, being a skeptic, not saying no, but being skeptical.
Yeah, it's hard to define agnosticism, but yeah, we can use that kind of term.
It is.
You know, Scandinavian nations are similar and so on. So that the religious people who say that the religion is a must for societies are wrong. The other question is why does this correlation exist? And there's a hypothesis that's been developing over the years, and it's called the socioeconomic security hypothesis. Basically, the idea is that as societies get better and better run, people basically lose interest in religion. And this is really important because a very common idea is that religion, one way or another, is very integral to human beings. There's the idea that people are inherently strongly religious, that hunter-gatherers were always religious, which is not true. It's now becoming understood that the Hadza hunter-gatherers of East Africa have very low rates of religion, which is very interesting. People hadn't been picking up on that until recently. There are other reasons for people have thought people religious maybe fear of death, maybe because there really is a God, there's a transcendent connection. Richard Dawkins came up with the idea of memes and so on. But obviously, religion can fail. It's not always present in hunter-gatherers. It's not very present in the French or the Swedes. And that means that religion is not integral to humans. It's actually a superficial opinion that can be dropped very rapidly. And that's what's happened in Europe. You look at the stats, up to World War II, there's still a lot of religiosity. But look at the plots. They just go way, way down.
Well, let's talk about it. But two things, like a question what you were saying. One is that these advanced nations of Europe that have universal health care, that where the poverty rates are lower, where crime is the crime rate is much less, and the teenage pregnancy rate is a lot less. Even though, as a sidebar, in Denmark and Holland and places like that, the rate of teen sexuality is higher there. Teen birth rate is lower. That's a whole other question.
Teen sexuality rates? I don't think that they're higher.
They are higher.
There's a study that came out a while ago on the French, comparing French and the Americans. That came
French,
out
the
same. But I hadn't seen this one about Swedes.
But because of the people teach kids how to have safe sex,
yeah,
they don't. They have access to birth control devices and condoms. There's less teenage pregnancy and abortion.
Yeah, there's much considerably lower.
So at any rate, I mean to digress into that, but back to where I was going for this, that in those societies were religious, but it was the movements in those societies that built a society that where life became more sustainable and protected that might have led to the lowering of religiosity.
Yeah, basically, right? When the real reason that people are religious is because they're looking for the aid and protection of gods in their daily lives as a helper. If you're living in a second or third world nation and you're in constant crisis, potential crisis, looking to the supernatural can be, you know, a psychological relieving effect. In the United States, we're still doing that because even though we have a lot of prosperity, it's very iffy. You know, you can have a upper middle class income family, has a nice McMansion, SUVs and so on. And, you know, the nice vacations in Europe and whatever. And if the breadwinner loses their job, they lose their health insurance, somebody gets really sick, they can be bankrupt and lose everything very rapidly. So it's a very intense competitive society. People are trying to acquire wealth in order to protect themselves. So people are looking for supernatural help by organized religion, Christianity in general. And the ultimate expression of this, of course, is prosperity Christianity, which is pretty conservative, creationist and so on. In Europe, people just aren't under those pressures. They have universal health care, so they're never going to go bankrupt because of that. They always know they're going to be able to get good health care. Job security is better, or they have a better system for protecting people who are out of work, like in Denmark. You can get fired pretty easily in Denmark, but you're not going to lose your home or whatever. And what happens is that when societies are run like that, people just lose interest in looking to the supernatural. And the way I put it is that, you know, come Sunday, what are you going to do? You're going to go to church and appeal to the gods that you don't really need anymore. You're going to go for a hike. And that's basically what's happened there. And church attendance has just plunged off a cliff. And the important thing about this, this, is that this effect is very powerful. It happens repeatedly. There's no exceptions to this. And apparently there's no real good way of reversing it in a well-run society. And what this means is that religious societies can never succeed, because the success kills off the religion.
How do you judge success then? Well, what do you mean they can never be successful?
Long lifespans. You know, the United States has the shortest lifespans in the Western world and the highest juvenile mortality rates. And that's the plot that really freaked me out when I started doing this 10 years ago.
Juvenile mortality rates.
I plotted, you know, how fast the kids die off. And it's almost a straight line with religiosity. I was just, what the heck is going on here? And I had never seen this.
Break that down. What does that mean for our listeners? What are you talking about? When you say that, describe what that means.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean.
The juvenile mortality rate and religiosity, to find what your hypothesis is there. What are you saying?
The United States has the highest juvenile mortality rate since the most religious. And the more less religious Western nations are, the lower the juvenile mortality rate is. And it plots on a nearly a straight line. There are no exceptions. It's just you can't get a better correlation out of it. It's just unbelievable. So I actually lost my track of thought there.
Well, you were talking – we were talking about that. What you said was that there's no going back once you create a society where there's less religiosity and more stability.
Yeah.
And falling backwards. I mean, so the question though, so what is that? What I'm trying to get to is beyond that statistical.
That's right. It's the basics. If you're living long lives is important. Having kids not die off. This is a shocking thing that the most religious country in the developed world has high juvenile mortality rates. There's a study that just came out in Health Affairs showing. This is not due to obesity rates in America or bad health or accident rates and so on, smoking. And in the evolutionary psychology paper, I showed immigration rates and ethnic diversity aren't responsible either. There's something very wrong going on in this country. So it's things like that. You know, having low abortion rates, although I think abortion is way overhyped as a problem. You still want to keep them low. You don't want STD infections and you don't want divorce and that sort of thing. So when you look at these basic factors, basically across the board, I'm starting to add in new factors, and it's not coming out well for religious nations.
So heterogeneity is not a factor? Homogeneity is not a factor? People make that argument a lot. The only reason we have
it's just
so much social
statistics,
dislocation in America
matter.
Is our heterogeneity.
Australia, Canada are more diverse than we are. We're immigrants. You can just forget it. It just doesn't correlate.
Well, Canada and Australia not more diverse racially than we are.
I've been to Toronto. It is amazing, the ethnic diversity.
No. But the nations as a whole don't have the legacy of slavery. Canada and the United States share the destruction of Native people. But as a whole, we are probably the most heterogeneous society on the planet Earth.
There's a paper came out recently that I use that says no.
I find that hard to believe that
– Well, Canada is, you have to go after that guy then.
Because Canada is demographically not –
It's fantastically diverse.
Not as diverse as we are in terms of
racial. I'm going to disagree on that.
Well, I mean, I wish I could pull it out right now because in terms of the Latino population, the black population, and you add to that immigrant population, there's no nation on the planet.
I'm going to disagree with on that one.
All right, we're going to have to come back for this one. I'm going to throw this right in front of you and say, see Gregory Paul.
Well, you're going to look up the paper that I have in there. I cite the paper. You can look that up. You should go ahead and do that.
I've read most of your papers.
This paper I cited was apparently the most up-to-date one. They redid the data. The last major study had been done by a Soviet back in the 60s or something like that. And this is a redo of the data, and he shows the United States is not unique in this regard.
Okay, well, we'll put that one aside for a moment since I don't have the data in front of me. I don't have your data or my data in front of me on that one. The other part is, though, that when we talk about religiosity and not having anything to do with the advancement of society, and we talked about this once before, but let me lay it out to you again for our listeners.
I never said that.
Huh?
I didn't say that.
But I thought you did say that.
No, you said nothing to do. I didn't say that. It has some role, but it's not nearly as important as people say.
Let me say it has a major role then. All right? Let me give you several factors why I think it has a major role. A, you have the abolition movement in this country, which was based on the evangelical church in the 1820s, 30s, and 40s, and the 1850s and 60s. The movement for women's rights and the right to vote was all based in the evangelical system of this country, that the battle for civil rights in America to break the back of segregation, to open up this country to a racial equality, was built on the black church, was built on the movement that came out of the black church. That those things didn't do them solely, but fueled those movements for change. I mean, there's a lot of arguments in today's evangelical movements and the progressive end of those movements that say, don't just look to this narrow-thinking right-wing group among the evangelicals. Our history in America is based on the social reform and change of our society, and that's what's pushed us ahead, along with more secular movements like the labor union movements and others as well. But that seems to fly in the face of saying that religion has not had a positive social role in our country.
Well, again, I don't say that it doesn't have a certain positive role, but it's way overrated. And I'm doing a chapter that I was invited to do for the Oxford Handbook on Evolutionary Perspectives in war, violence, and homicide, something like that. Mm-hmm. And while working on this, I've been dealing with the slavery issue, and I realized something just a few days ago. And somebody else must have pointed this out. But Christianity has exacerbated the slavery problem for 2,000 years. And the way it works is the reason slavery is gone is because of economics. And the document that said why slavery has to come to an end came out in 1776, a very famous document on the Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. He said slavery doesn't work in a modern industrial consumer society because it's too expensive. Slaves are terrible consumers and so on. And they compete with free labor. Now, let us assume 2,000 years ago that the Romans – that Christianity hadn't been invented. And Christianity is an invention. It's not real. I'm 100% sure Jesus existed, and if he was – he did exist. He wasn't the Son of God. So let's assume it didn't come into being. Now, the Romans could have invented modern industry. They had a lot of water-based industry, and they knew about steam power. So let's just assume that they had done that. What would have happened then is they probably would have gotten rid of slavery back 2,000 years ago. Maybe Cicero would have written a book on the wealth of empires, and you have to get rid of slavery. It's not going to work. Instead, the Bible endorses slavery. Well, the Old and New Testaments go to great lengths saying, here's how you keep your slaves. Here's how you treat them. You can kill them if you need to. Even Jesus approves of cutting slaves to pieces if they disobey their master. In the New Testament, it goes on and on about slaves need to obey their masters like they would – obey and fear their masters like they would God. One whole chapter is about Paul returning a Christian slave to his rightful master and so on. Well, even there, if there's really a God and the Bible is the word of God, then if the Bible had said 2,000 years ago, slavery's wrong, I mean, why couldn't it have done that? I mean, what's the big problem with the Bible saying slavery is wrong? Just don't do it. Old Testament, New Testament, that would have killed off slavery, or at least among Christians. None of that happened. So in 1866, the Pope issued a statement saying slavery is the part of the natural order of things after the American Civil War. And what happened was in the South, Protestants in the South were getting at the Catholics saying, you're abolitionists. And they were saying, oh, no. We're issuing statements saying slavery is fine. Because the Southern Christians, Protestant Christians, said slavery is fine, we ended up with a Civil War that killed off 600,000 people. So is it true that the Christians were involved in the abolition movement? Yes, to their credit. That's a good thing. But overall, we would have done better if we had developed modern industry back 2,000 years ago, or at least the Bible had said slavery's wrong. Christianity overall made the situation worse.
I'm not going to sit here and argue about what the Bible says about slavery. I have just entire documents here about the things that the Bible says is contradictory to the way our life lives in the modern world. But that still doesn't detract from the argument that without the religious social movements in America,
it wouldn't have made a difference.
Because the religious movements in America, however they interpreted or reinterpreted the Bible and the spiritual texts themselves, were the basis for social change in the 19th century and the 20th
century. Slavery would have ended in the 1800s because of the economic problem. It just wasn't going to work anymore. It would have had to go out.
That may be true.
So Christianity was not critical to the end of slavery.
That may be true, but the Christian movement to end slavery, the social reform movement based on out of the evangelical Christians and all the leaders of the abolition movement were evangelical Christians for the most part in the white community. Without them, there would have been no movement to end slavery in America, and the juxtaposition of that movement and the Civil War and where what happened to Lincoln during the Civil War is what changed the notion of slavery, which was probably would have ended anyway because of the economic determinants. But the movement to end it, to push the ending, as well as the movement for the women's right to vote and for the black civil rights movement, all came out of the church.
If the United States had been atheist, let's say it was majority atheist, they would have gotten rid of slavery. They said economically it isn't working. And I'm not going to say atheists would have gotten rid of slavery saying, oh, it's just wrong and all that. Maybe I don't know what they would have done about that. I actually haven't thought about that. It just economically it would have had to come to an end. And you wouldn't have had the Civil War because you wouldn't have had the conservative Christians down there saying slavery's fine. Here's the Bible says so. And also remember the Southern Christians, they were anti-capitalist too. They were against capital. That was part of the big argument is that
the capitalists sold their cotton and made the money, I mean.
Yeah, but they were saying that full-scale capitalism is a bad system. They didn't like that. So they were still going for the old ways, both in terms of slavery's fine biblically, but also pre-capitalist society is better. So if the United States were atheist, we would have gotten rid of slavery anyway. We wouldn't have had a civil war.
But I don't want to stay on this tack too long, so I'm going to move ahead to something else. But, I mean, even if many of the factors are correct, as you're saying, that the racism of even the abolitionists, even
which was developed by Christianity,
even the people who were against slavery, were racist against black folks in America who wanted them separate from everybody else. Put black folks back to Africa. Send them to Liberia. Send them to the Caribbean. Send them to Colombia, which was one idea one of Abraham Lincoln's good friends had that Lincoln bought into for a while. I mean, so this – I'm saying the factors are much more complex than saying that this was, A, that religion didn't have – certain religious groups didn't have a huge role to play in ending slavery, A, and B, that all of our notions about slavery were based on religion. Because the slavery in Roman and Greek times weren't based on religion. They were based on the notions that we had
slaves. I'm not blaming – what I'm blaming Christianity for is not getting rid of it and also making it racial, because it was the story of Ham, the curse of Ham that contributed to this, and then Protestants in the South decided to really make it into a racial thing so they wouldn't be enslaved. Southern white Christians said, we don't want any whites enslaved, so why are we enslaving the blacks? Well, they're inferiors. That's the story of Ham and that sort of thing. So that's what I blame Christianity for. You know, Christianity slowed down the end of slavery about a couple thousand years. It didn't do a good job of it. Could have done much better.
So the idea that you also find an anathema to thinking is that this is a whole argument over the God gene. Over there is something in us genetically that makes us want to believe in a higher spiritual being.
Yeah, it's so easily lost religion, and so many people, when the circumstances are right, it just can't be true. It just is really refuted by that. There's a paper that came out recently arguing that it's much harder for people to be atheist than theistic, the idea that somehow theism is integral to the human system. But if that were true, then why is religion just withered away so rapidly and so easily? Because there's not been a culture war in Europe or Canada. There hasn't been this huge atheist system saying, we've got to be atheists, because atheism is hardly organized. And the churches were opposing this. And people just did it naturally, spontaneously. And I want to point out, I'm not a committed militant atheist who wants everybody to be atheist and thinks that everybody who's atheist is being rational. Your average European atheist, they're not thinking about it very much. They're not really – there's been some excellent work done by Phil Zuckerman where he went to Denmark and interviewed people. It's very casual. People have just kind of – they don't worry about it anymore. And Phil has done this in his book on Society Without God, where he interviewed Danes, and he does a great – Danish accent when he replicates how these people talk, but says, they say, you live a life, try to be good. Oh, I don't worry about death. Try to live a good life. And that's what they're doing. It's very casual. And that means that religion can't be really inherent to humans. It cannot be genetically programmed.
Not genetically programmed, but I don't know of a society or culture. I know you talk about a small nomadic group in what's now Tanzania and but the most indigenous cultures, most societies in general, have a spiritual basis to them and believe – may not believe in a monotheistic God, may not believe in some gray-bearded man in the sky dictating what's going to be in somebody's Bible or Quran, but that have a sense of something beyond us. And the vast majority of the world still does. Over 80%, I think, of the world's population –
That's meaningless. Spiritual belief. That is scientifically meaningless, because that's because most people live in dysfunctional circumstances. So they're going to be religious, or there's going to be a strong tendency to them. You'd have to have a world where everybody's living in a first world society like France or Sweden, and then see what their religiosity is over time. Then you could tell that. So you see what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying.
Okay. So what would the world like that be? It would probably be like Sweden or France. And then, what's left of religion in those countries? Well, there's still some. But does that mean it would always be that way? I don't know. And I'm a scientist. I'm not going to tell you what a world like that would be in the end. Could it end up 100% atheist? Maybe. I tend to be skeptical of that. Or maybe it would be a low-grade religiosity left over. That would be the actual test. We don't have that information in yet. We may never have that information.
We may never have it. given the way that we're probably going to have a world where everyone is living a secure life, is my guess. We're not going to see that.
Probably not.
Probably not. But throughout human history, that has been.
And people lived in their lousy circumstances, so that doesn't tell us anything scientifically. That's not a test.
People lived in lousy circumstances.
Yeah, short lifespans, and you know, the lifespans used to be 20 years on average until recently. Half the kids were dying off.
That's true, and in some Asian societies, that was true.
Oh, up until 1800, average lifespans, infant mortality rates, childhood mortality rates were 50%.
Though, I mean, there have been studies that I've read recently that some indigenous cultures. Their lifespan was as long, if not longer, than most European societies that happened upon them, and were very healthy societies.
It is true that if you got past childhood, you had a fairly decent chance of making it to old age, but infant mortality, childhood mortality rates have always been horrendously high. There were studies done in Europe in the 1700s showing that. In India, the British did demographics showing half the kids were dying. You just look at a graveyard, you know, from 1800. It's got all the little. There's one here in Baltimore, not too far from here, up in Hamden.
There's one
little plaques. You know,
right
all the little
our place out in the country. That,
you know, born 1801, right. Born died 1802.
That, right, exactly. 1801, 1801 sometimes.
Yeah. And of course, that the mass juvenile mortality rate disproves the existence of a good God. I'm not kidding. It's about. I published a paper in Philosophy and Theology last year. You know, the argument is really over in terms of whether there's a good God or not. People still debating here constantly, is there a God or not? I can't disprove a God any more than I can ghosts or poltergeists or fairies. You know, Conan Doyle, the writer of the Sherlock Holmes stories, believed in fairies. He wrote a book called On the Coming of the Fairies about this.
Right.
And but that's not really the core debate, because even if there's a God, if the God's evil, that's not doing us any good. The question you can really test is whether there's a good God or not. And no good God exists.
So the other thing that you do that occupies much of your time is the world of dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
When we saw each other last, when we tried to do this taping a little bit ago, I said the Tyrannosaurus Rex, if I remember correctly from our conversation. And you said, admonished me that one should never say the before the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah, it's just, you should say Tyrannosaurus Rex or Apatosaurus.
Why is that? Why no the?
It's just not the way it's done. It's, it's, you know, it's like saying the horse. You know, it's actually a little bit kid-like, you know, to do that. So
maybe I'm a little childlike. Hmm. So what about you also were talking about the Tyrannosaurus and even our thoughts about dinosaurs and what made them up, what their species were, is something that we're rethinking.
Yeah, well, I'll have a book out, the Princeton University, the Princeton Field Guide to Dinosaurs.
When's that come out?
It's already out.
Oh, it is already out?
Oh, yeah, sure. I just saw it at the Barnes & Noble, Hawkins Barnes & Noble. So you can get it right now. And it's a great Christmas gift. So
So what's in there that's new?
Well, one of the things,
I've seen your new field guide.
You know, it's basically like a field guide for birds. It's got that basic format.
With your drawings in them?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because you do, that's part of what brought you into this world of paleontology.
Yes.
Your recognition was your drawings and
paintings. Yeah, I started as a kid. My father says he was responsible for my interest in dinosaur art, because he worked for a paper company and brought home vast amounts of paper. And one of the things I tried to do in this field guide is that there's been a tendency to say, well, like, for example, Apatosaurus comes from the Morrison Formation and Tyrannosaurus from the Hell Creek Formation. But these formations themselves often took long periods of time to form. The Morrison Formation, which is where you find a Apatosaurus and Diplodocus and Allosaurus and Stegosaurus, it took 8 million years to form. And we now know there's species turnover over time. And the same is going on with Tyrannosaurus, perhaps, because the Hell Creek and Lance Formations where it's found took a couple million years to form. And species generally don't last that long, because evolution is about species turnover. So I was looking at Tyrannosaurus, and Tyrannosaurus comes in two basic types. There's a type with a robust femur, upper thigh bone, and a kind with a gracile.
And with a what?
Or a slender femur, a gracile.
Slender
gracile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's generally been thought that they're boys and girls. And because some possible reproductive tissue was found on the inside of one of these robust femurs, those are the girls. But what I did is I looked at the stratigraphy, where these slender and robust types turn up. And lower down, you don't find the gray cells, at least not yet. And then at the top, the gray cells are the most common. So this suggests of species evolution. And the robust form has already been named back over 100 years ago, Tyrannosaurus rex, which is a tyrant lizard king. And if I do decide to name the gray cell species, it's going to be Tyrannosaurus regina, tyrant lizard queen. Which I think is kind of cool.
So what's the connection between your work on dinosaurs and paleontology and this?
Well, let me see if I can get through this. Because everything's connected, like the James Burke's connection series. Everything
right.
relates to one another. So I'm working on Tyrannosaurus rex stratigraphy.
Right.
And you need the specimens. And we're getting interference now going out west. To get some ranchers won't allow paleontologists on the ground because they're creationists, and they don't want those. They're godless of paleontologists. So why are they doing that? Why are creationists upset about paleontologists? Well, it's partly because they're afraid that if we don't have a godly society, we're going to go to hell in a handcart. So I did the research on that to figure out what's going on about that. And this is one of the fascinating things is that everything leads to something else. So you have this right-wing movement in this country that's saying you can't believe in Darwin, yet they're the social Darwinists. They want a social Darwinistic system. And they're really against socialism. You know, read Sarah Palin's new book. She's against socialism. Well, you go to Acts, which is the first gospel after the four gospels about Jesus. It's the one description about the ideal Christian society. It's the only economic description in the Bible. And it says that the first churches, there was no property, and God, and people who didn't contribute to the property were being killed. They were dying mysteriously, which means God endorses, or basically God is saying those, the Christians who are not socialists are worthy of death. So we have this bizarre situation where the Christians, fundamentalist Christians, conservative Christians, are denying socialism, even though it's the only description in the Bible of economics. And they're running this economic system, this socially Darwinistic system. And I don't understand, why isn't Rachel Maddow talking about this and Keith Olbermann? Why are they going to the Bible and throwing that right back in Sarah Palin's face and Glenn Beck's face? And also, do this with Glenn Beck and say, Glenn, by the way, you're a Mormon. Are you not believing in socialism because you deny the truth of the Bible? Because Mormons don't believe in the Bible. They believe in the Book of Mormon. And why aren't they saying they're social Darwinists? So this all ties into each other, and I really love all of this. I love working on the species of Tyrannosaurus rex while saying, you know, the Keith Olbermann should be going after Christians for not being good socialists. And I'm serious. If you meet a Christian who's against socialism, say, then you're anti-Christian, right? And they say, what do you mean? I say, and go to the Bible, get the Bible, read Acts, and quote it back to them right in their faces. And I want to see this happen. How these people are going to react to this? By the way, if you do look at like on the web, Christians will say why socialism is wrong. And they say, well, the Bible doesn't mention socialism, but that's just a voluntary thing. And they ignore the part where people are dying. Apparently God is killing them off. So they don't really have a defense for this.
But there is a very strong world in America, as there is around the globe, but in America, of progressive religious leaders who do a lot of incredible work for social change,
and
economic justice,
the key point
and
about
changing
this.
Our system.
If we adopt the things they say, and I agree with them, and I don't mind working with religious people who agree with me on the progressive systems, is that's going to kill off religion. So one of the things that's very important here is that when I'm talking about where I would like to see a more atheistic society and why that's important, and we had that debate earlier, the thing is that one way or another, you run a society well, religion's going to fade off. Even if everybody in the society is – everybody who's Christian is a progressive – Christianity will die off. And this is probably, again, everything's connected. This is almost certainly one of the reasons the religious right is opposed to progressive policies, because they look to Europe and they see what's happened. And they say universal health care doesn't help religion, and they're right. And another way it doesn't – remember, government welfare policies and medical care, they suppress the faith-based charities, and that's a major outreach for religion. So they know what they're talking about. So I just don't see how you can build, in these basic practical terms, how you can build a society that's most successful in the European model and religious.
Well, Gregory Paul, this has been great. And what I want to suggest to our listeners is to write here at Steiner Show, steinershow.org, steinershow@gmail.com, I mean to say. Give us your thoughts on this conversation we just had with Gregory Paul. We'd like to hear your response to this during this week between Christmas and New Year's as we talk with Gregory Paul, one of our Urbanite Radio stories. And you can link to all of his articles on our website. And I'm sure he'll be back here as a guest again in the future to continue discussions with other guests here live in the studio. And Gregory Paul, good to have you with us.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I really enjoyed it.
And have a happy new year.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.